Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Beyond Rent. In this episode, we explore how modern manufactured homes, cross-mod innovation, and zoning reform are shaping the housing landscape. From cutting costs to boosting energy efficiency, we're diving into the policies, partnerships, and technologies driving the future of housing. To guide us through this conversation, we have Ramsey from Clayton Development Group joining us today.
Yeah. Hey, Ramsey. Hello. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited that you're here. You're in office. You just came up from Tennessee to visit us today. Super excited to learn more about this industry that we've been really involved in for many, many years, decades now. But not everyone has that deep insight and knowledge that you have with all the years of experience that you have in this space. So excited for our conversation. But before we get there, let's learn more about Ramsey. Tell us what you do, how you do it, and why you do it.
Yeah, so at Ramsey Cohen, work for the Clayton Development Group. My career has really just been at Clayton Homes. I started there almost 17 years ago, working in a call center, and then just grew and took on a lot of different roles. So I love being a part of the Clayton Development Group. What we offer is kind of turnkey construction services. So if someone out there is looking to, like, say they own a park or a community and they're looking to expand, they need someone to build that infrastructure, build pads, bring the homes in, set, deliver, we are here to help with that. So we can offer that full, you know, planning of a neighborhood all the way to just delivery and set of a home. So really excited to be a part of that. It's a new adventure for Clayton and one that we're really thrilled to be taking on.
So how long has Clayton been doing that side of it? Because obviously Clayton's been around the industry since forever, right?
Yeah.
But this is a new side of Clayton.
Yeah. So the development aspect that really, when I say development, I'm really thinking the horizontal, right? And so not the vertical, the home going in, right? That's, we've done that 60 plus years, but that horizontal work of all the infrastructure, bringing in sewer and that sort of thing, is its own kind of thing, right? Than it is just building homes. And so, that's newer to us, but we've got an incredible team of folks that are able to do it. And it may be a newer function. It is not new to the teams that are executing against it, right?
Absolutely. No, that's really exciting. So you've been with Clayton a long time. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you even got involved. Like what was kind of your story getting started with Clayton?
Yeah, so I just needed a job, frankly, at first. I was still working in school, finishing up school, and I got a job working in a call center, and then was able to keep working through finishing school, was able to get out debt-free, luckily. They used to have a program, do some tuition reimbursement, that sort of thing, help me stick around, right? And then from there, I ended up in a position where I was selling distressed assets, mostly land. And then I put together this rudimentary email list where I was just blind copying lots of people for land deals across the country. And someone somewhere thought, like, oh, this guy knows email marketing. And stepped into that. And so I did marketing for a long time, helping our retail division, and then was in a spokesperson type role, and then now working with the development group. So a lot of different hats in that 17 years.
Yeah, I love that story, Ramsey, because let's be honest, we know a lot of people that have been very successful by moving different companies and kind of leveling up their career along the way, where you've done the opposite, right? You've stayed dedicated to the same place. Yeah, you may have just needed a job, but you put in the time, the effort, and you've gained a lot of experience. So I love hearing that. That's an encouragement to anyone out there that says, can I stay loyal to one company, one brand for an extended amount of time? The answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I love working at Clayton. You know, it did shift from job to career, right? I'm very passionate about what we do. I often tell people that outside my family, there are really three things that I'm passionate about, and it's affordable housing, Tennessee football, in the city of Knoxville. So the fact that I get to live and breathe and do one of those for a living is really incredible. But being there as long as I have is amazing. Getting to build all those relationships and knowing people through the years. I did have a brief sabbatical, let's call it, for 6 months that I didn't work there in 2014. Left, grass not greener, came back, and have been thrilled with that decision ever since.
Yeah. Well, we all need those experiences in life, right? To keep us on the right track.
Absolutely.
All right, well, let's jump into our conversation for today because we are talking about housing, like we do often, but we're focused a little more on the manufactured housing side. And to really set the stage and frame this up, I want to hear from your words, what manufactured housing is, and maybe some different types or variations of manufactured housing that exists out there, because we really work with a wide range of different types of operators in the space, and not all of them are going to be super aware of manufactured housing and exactly where it fits. So let's set the stage for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that being the place to start, right? Because I think a lot of times people can think of manufactured housing as a monolith. That means one thing, one type of house, one way it looks and what it does, right? And that's really not the case. You know, in terms of price points of homes, we have an extremely large range from, you know, very affordable to, you know, very high-end finishes and that sort of thing. And so I think to level set it, manufactured housing is a home that's built, you know, today's modern manufactured homes are, it's a home that's built to the federal HUD code. HUD is our regulator in the industry. And so homes that are built to that are manufactured homes, right? A lot of people use the term modular, right? That gets thrown out quite a bit. And what I found is a lot of times when people say that, what they mean is a home with high-end finishes. They mean it looks like a site-built home. And what that functionally means, though, is that it's a home that's built to whatever local building codes are going to are enforced wherever that home is going to be placed eventually. We know that, you know, 98% of our homes, roughly, is an industry, don't move from the first place they're sited. And the challenge with that modular approach is that, you know, that the regulations that we have to operate in are wildly different. You think one county to the next county, they could have totally different IRCs adopted and have their own tweaks and quirks. So that's going to slow down things in production relative to, you know, that HUD code enables us to have a national building code that enables us to go at the speeds that we do and be able to provide more affordable housing out to people. And so, yeah, that's a key distinction, because I think a lot of times people think modular means nice home, and that's, there are nice modular homes, but you can, a modern manufactured home is just as gorgeous and just as wonderful and going to perform just as well. And right, frankly, there's a lot of benefits to, you know, getting a home that's a modern manufactured home as opposed to a modular home.
That breakdown is so helpful, because I do hear those terms. Even people in the industry that have a deep knowledge, they still kind of, there's some gray areas in there as far as the way that we talk about it. But in reality, it comes down to that code, right? What mm-hmm. code is it being built for? So that's even helpful for someone like me that hears those terms quite often. So as we hear more about modular, you kind of identified some challenges there. Are there solutions that kind of are helping with those challenges, so there's less of these regulation concerns?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most exciting innovations that we've seen in terms of housing production, I mean, anywhere, frankly, is the shift to what we call CrossMod. So CrossMod is a home that is still built to that federal HUD code, right? So it enables the speed, the national building code that we can follow. But it's a home that appraises and finances just like a site-built home. A good way to think about it is 70% of the home is built off-site, 30% of the home is going to be built on-site. So you build a foundation, we come in, set the home, site-built porch, site-built garage, all tied into one, looks like a site-built home. I mean, frankly, a lot of people, if they didn't see the home arrive, would have no idea unless they were to, you know, crawl underneath the house and see the steel chassis. But yeah, that's a big, big, big change for our industry. One that, Clayton, we're really happy to have that. And it's a big focus of ours, because we see a lot of potential with people who we have always made a lot of economic sense for, right? But for whatever reason, we're not breaking into that consideration set. So having a home that has that look, fit, and finish that they want. And the really, really big thing is the change with appraisals. You know, the fact that an appraiser is not just suggested to go use site-built. They're required to use a minimum of two site-built homes if there aren't other cross-mod homes to appraise it against. With it being somewhat of a new innovation, there's oftentimes, if you're going into a market, you're oftentimes the first one going into that market with cross-mods. The fact that we have homes appraising against site-built is a revolutionary big change for our industry.
Yeah, that's monumental, because that, when we kind of break down manufactured housing and then modular homes and all these things, the actual value of the home over time is a talking point that people have. And you're saying a cross mod, that really isn't a concern anymore. It's going to be compared to the site built home. So if you're somebody considering site built versus cross mod, all of a sudden you don't have to worry about that piece, mm-hmm. right? That's taken off the table.
Yeah, that's correct. And you know, you're then going to be able to capitalize on the speed of production, right? On average, when we're looking at those cross mod homes nationwide, from footers to finish, let's call it. So putting in footers, but and then the home being ready for I'd let my mom move in type, you know, finish. is about 90 days. So that's an incredible speed when you think about it. I mean, that's really difficult for other builders to build a complete full home in 90 days, right? But we are able to achieve that. And so, yeah, it creates a lot of new opportunity, whether it's in the for sale market or in the build to rent market. We've seen a lot of people look at that and leverage CrossMod for that build to rent model, because I think in part it gives you a couple of different exit strategies, right? You don't have to sell an entire neighborhood or an entire development all at one time. They could piecemeal it and sell off, you know, home by home to the individuals who are already renting that home even. So, yeah, it creates a lot of new interesting business opportunities and ways to you know, leverage this in the marketplace.
So you had mentioned that 90 days. I want to maybe start there. How does that compare to site build? What is like the average? Are we talking double, triple on site? But I'm sure there's a wide range based on your builder and all these things. But what's the normal date range that you would probably give on a site build?
Yeah, I think, well, I know we have a number of site builders within our development or our company. And I know they're some of the fastest that we have out there, because we're kind of blurring the lines between site build, not site build kind of approach. But I think they're closer to 120, if not longer, 180. I don't know the exact number of what it sits at today, but I do know that we go a lot faster. You know, we are currently doing a development using CrossMod Homes in South Knoxville, where I live. And then I think we're going to be doing about four homes a month. So four homes completely completed, ready to be sold in it, you know, a month. I mean, that's it's an incredible speed compared to anything else.
No, that's great. And then you mentioned build to rent as well. We were talking a little bit before we hit the record button today about build to rent and how this is an industry that's really up and coming. There's a lot of momentum happening here. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what build to rent looks like. Is it multifamily? Is it single family? Is it something else in the middle? And how CrossMod is such an interesting application for build to rent, because the speed to being ready, and like you just mentioned, this ability to really kind of take the long-term view a little bit differently. You could sell these off one by one. They are going to appraise at higher values. How much is Clayton focused on build to rent right now? Is that an area where you're really leaning in towards, or yeah, is it still kind of testing out the water?
I mean, I think it's a matter of who we're working with and what their business model is, right? So we work with a lot of different developers that have a lot of different approaches. And so, we're here to help. We know that the work that we do and our speed means that we can bring more attainable homes to market. They're going to be, whether rent or for sale, be easier for people to afford and live in. And, you know, you pose the question of like, is build to rent single family? Is it multifamily? I'd say yes. You know, it can be both. But yeah, there's going to be always families that want to be in a particular school system. They want to have a garage for their kids. They want to be in a neighborhood where they can go ride bikes, right? That's not high rise apartments. And so I think there is a lot of space and demand for that single family build to rent.
Yeah, we're getting really excited about that space as well. Again, it's still, I would say, wait and see as far as how it evolves. But we're excited about that space. We think it does provide a lot of opportunity. And specifically for people that want their own space, their own home, they don't want an apartment. They want to rent, but they want that community feel. They maybe want some of the benefits that come with a traditional HOA. Like, it starts blurring all of these lines to really kind of fit a very unique place in the market that there really isn't a whole lot of people filling that space right now.
No. I mean, I think that's the big opportunity right there, is that there's nobody really in the market. So if you can find a market that, you know, you can rent these homes for X amount, like, let's partner together, reach out, because we're here to help with that land development and home acquisition, and help you weigh that and put it into a pro forma, make sure, you know, you as a company or firm are going to be coming out ahead, because we want you to keep doing business with us, right?
That's right. I mean, that's really the long-term goal, right?
Is to have
many, many developments that kind of fit that. Now, when you talk about CrossMod, and maybe even if we want to talk about the other variations of manufactured homes, how does it fit into, I would say, some of the traditional processes? How are these being viewed? You know, we talked about appraisal, but what about other things like loans and expectations on that side? Are there special considerations there? Are there any red tape or hurdles on that side?
Yeah, I would say, one, the CrossMod home helps overcome a lot of those, whether it's a Fannie or Freddie-backed loan. Anybody who's writing those GSE loans today, any lender could go and then, you know, write a loan on a CrossMod home. It's a 30-year conventional mortgage, just the same as any site-built home that you would go get. And so I think in that area, we're starting to see more of our industry being on par, which we, frankly, my opinion is we should always have been. We're starting to see that, you know, change and shift. And those loans, I think you can do as little as 3% down. So there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of changes and innovation happening in the finance side. I'm not a banker, so I can't ever really go into the details because I don't understand them all. But I do know that there's a lot of innovative products that are being brought to market to help enable more home purchases.
And all of those steps, I think, are so important. You know, I'm not going to use terminology that people have used for manufactured housing because I know we want to avoid those words, right? But there are words that are out there that people still use to describe this industry. Yep. And every one of these steps gets us further and further away from that feel.
Yep.
Because now you can line them up apples to apples. The loan is the same. The appraisal is the same. All these things are the same. What's different? Oh, a portion of it was manufactured off-site, installed on-site. But the fit, the finish, the experience, the long-term value, all of that's the same. It's very comparable.
Yeah. Oh, they're absolutely comparable. And, you know, I think, you know, I appreciate wanting to stay away from the words. There's a lot that I don't, you know, the T word, I don't want to bring up, right? And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the industry more broadly, right? I think people have in their mind's eye a particular image and a particular way and thing that our industry is. Almost universally, and I've taken a lot of people through their first home, right? Blown away. They walk in, they go, oh my God, I didn't know it was like this. It's like, yes, yeah, do you like the stone countertops? Like, you know, you can, there's a lot that you can do when just because we're building it indoors doesn't make it in any way inferior, which that's unfortunately the way a lot of people have thought about it. But I'd say if you're going to buy a luxury Italian sports car, do you want it made in a field or would you like it to be made in a factory? I think at a home building facility is probably the best efficient way to go about construction. I think we're seeing a lot of people be open to that because they're recognizing it not just as a thing of, you know, housing of last resort, which I think we got thought of decades ago. This is housing of a great choice, right? You're enabling a great lifestyle for yourself because you can afford this home that otherwise you may not be able to achieve home ownership. So yeah, it's a really, really exciting time.
Yeah. I'm interested. That analogy with the car is so great because can you imagine purchasing a car and then all of a sudden the manufacturer, whoever's selling it to you, starts talking about, okay, we're going to have all these different vendors delivering different pieces and parts over the next 90 days. Let us know when they all arrive and then we'll send out an installer to put it all together.
Yeah.
You'd be like, no, thank you. I'll buy it from someone else.
Yeah. I'm going to, can I just get the car, please?
Yeah. Please get the car. So you talked about all of these elements coming together. And kind of leaving the past behind as far as manufactured housing. One of those is zoning, right? Getting zoning approved. I have to think even build to rent sometimes can face a little bit of this because it's a little bit of an unknown. People don't understand it quite yet. So what are you seeing in the area of zoning and zoning acceptance and changes, reform, things like that?
Yeah. So there's a lot of momentum around zoning changes. We've seen a lot of big wins. I was fortunate enough to be a part of a project where we set and built two cross-mod homes in the city limits of Atlanta, right? That's not a market that we typically have been able to play in. You know, you think about the markets that we can go, you could take a major city and draw a large circle around it where it becomes more of an exurb. That's where we can, you know, generally place our homes. And so the fact that we're seeing a lot of demand and interest for us to be in places that we haven't before is huge. So whether it's urban infill or new neighborhoods, right, I think there's a big opportunity. And you know, unfortunately, part of the reason that we find that opportunity, a willingness to change, is because there is an incredible need for affordable housing right now. Like, if it's not at crisis level, I don't know what it will take for us to call it a crisis, right? We need more housing. I always say we're not the solution, we're part of a solution. We kind of need, as a country, we need a lot, right? And so, we're seeing a lot of, you know, municipalities be interested in reaching out and how do we change this? What's going to enable you to be here? Because we know that you can help achieve that. And I've gone to a lot of folks and spoken with them, you know, whether it's a city council, county commission, and advocated, you know, for our industry. And the thing that I always am able to get a good reaction from, or at least, you know, get people thinking, is to ask them, like, do you have children? And they say, yes. Where do you want them to live? Here. Where? Where could they possibly buy? Right? You have to enable something to make it possibly affordable. Like, we're shutting the door to a lot of opportunity to people. And I think there's some growing recognition that those laws and policies and zoning have to go away or have to grow and change.
Yeah. I mean, affordable, attainable housing is a top priority. I know even the White House and so forth, the administration's looking at these things just like the past ones have. And And one of the questions I like to ask people is, if you had to repurchase your home, if you had to repurchase your home today at the rate that it would sell for, could you afford to live in your own home? And a lot of people shake their heads. No, they couldn't. No,
I couldn't.
So why do you think that others can, right? It's kind of like a new way to think about it. And I always like where, you know, we sit a little bit. Like I mentioned, we service a lot of different portions of the industry, multifamily, single family, and starting to hear a lot of the same conversations across all of them when it comes to the housing crisis and the solution, the bigger solution, and getting zoning changed. Even multifamily is faced with the same issues where certain areas are like, no, you cannot build more apartments in this area, despite that area knowing they need more housing, right?
Yeah. So it's sometimes it is beyond my understanding, because, you know, you could talk to someone, they're like, oh, one of our biggest problems is affordable housing. It's like, okay, could we have affordable or attainable housing here? And they go, no, you got to build that somewhere else. And I always say our industry has the misfortune or fortune of, we have NIMBYism plus, right? There's the not my backyards, but then we bring in, there's a lot of folks that have that stigma against our product. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of communities, people have moved, I've just learned a new term for it. Bananas build absolutely nothing anywhere near anybody or near anything. It's like, that's not growth. We need to build, we need to grow. So yeah, I think the fact that we're seeing municipalities want to change that. And I've talked to a lot of folks who are recognizing it as the lack of attainable housing in their communities is going to hurt the economic growth of their area. If you can't house the people who you need to work the jobs you have available, you're not going to grow, right? They're not going to be able to live there. So it's a real problem, but I think there's a lot of momentum of it changing and getting fixed.
Yeah. Obviously, I've heard of Not My Backyard NIMBY quite a bit. I have not heard Banana before.
I enjoyed that one when I heard it.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I think we're going to start talking about that a lot. But that is the reality, is a lot of areas are saying they don't want rental, period, in certain areas. However, there is a strong shift to people that will only ever rent. You know, we were talking about that as well. People rent their music. They rent their streaming services. People of certain generations are not really wanting to own a whole lot. They actually want to rent. That's actually their preferred lifestyle. Now they're being told where they can live and where they can't live based on really outdated zoning regulation.
Yeah, it's a real issue. And, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity for municipalities to learn and understand, you know, manufactured home parks, communities, that sort of thing, and understand how they can play a role in helping solve that affordable housing crisis, because they can. And I think operating from a place of assumption is never going to help them solve an issue. And I know that there's a lot of good conversations happening across the country to enable a lot more growth in that area.
Yeah. Well, I stay excited and encouraged that we work within an industry that's really the solution for affordable, attainable housing, whether it looks like manufactured or whether it looks like multifamily or single family. More housing really is a solution. You know, when we talk about the prices that are out there, everything comes down to supply.
Yeah.
We need more supply out there. So I stay encouraged, but I know there's a lot of work to do on the zoning side.
Yes, there is. And, you know, frankly, there's a lot of innovations and things coming that I think will make some of that zoning aspect a little bit easier. So we've got It's just an incredible time to be a part of an industry. And, you know, one of the things I love is working where I do is that we get to kind of we act as disruptors, right? Because we've seen any industry, and if you're not going to behave in that way, someone is going to come from outside the industry and disrupt it. And so I'm excited about a lot of the changes and things we have coming in terms of how we build and the final products that we have.
It's amazing to think that Clayton has been around for 60 plus years. Yet internally at Clayton, you see yourselves as a disruptor to your own industry, right? That is brilliant. I love that mentality, and we really need it. So let's talk a little bit about the future. What's kind of happening with maybe HUD or maybe other areas where we're trying to kind of push this portion of the industry into the future with some new innovation?
Yeah. So, I mean, one, for us, we were really proud to, we rolled out what we called e-built about 2 years ago. E-built is a our branding for a home that's built to the Department of Energy's Zero Energy Ready Home Standard. It's a mouthful, and that's why we branded it e-built, because it's a lot easier to say, right? And so now all of our, you know, HUD code housing, any of that homes that are built to that national building code, they're going to meet that standard. And what that results in is a consumer is going to be paying about 50% less in utilities than they would in a similarly sized home. I mean, that's huge. And we were thrilled to do that, because it's not just a matter of how much does it cost to buy the home. It people need to be able to stay in the homes, right? They need to be able to afford that rent and the utilities. And so this is a great opportunity for us to like look holistically at the cost of a home and ensure that people are going to be able to have something they can stay in and afford.
No, that's great. Because like most people, when you're looking to rent or buy or whatever, you're looking at your monthly costs, but let's be real honest here. We aren't always evaluating the utility costs long term, right? It's, can I afford the rent? Can I afford the mortgage? Yeah, you may have like the in the back of your mind, like, well, there's other costs associated with this, but utilities isn't one you think about very, very well. So 50% reduction is huge. So not only for the environment, sustainability, but also affordability.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of other changes and things coming, you know. I think there's opportunity for HUD to make some changes that would enable a revolutionary change to our industry and an opportunity for growth that could, you know, have a major, major impact in terms of how we're able to bring homes to market, how many homes we can bring to market, and the types of ways they are constructed. And so, yeah, it's a really, really exciting time in the industry.
Yeah, that's great. And so this e-built, this is a program that's in place now.
Correct.
You've executed this. This is available. And what portion of the homes that are coming out of Clayton fall under this e-build? Is it still early days where we're still ramping up, or is it across the board?
No, it's across the board. So regardless of price point, you know, it's not like a feature that only the highest end consumer homes are going to get. Every home, regardless of price point, that's built to that HUD code, 100% of them are going to be coming out as e-built. So making sure that those consumers are going to be saving on that cost of their utilities.
And what I love about that, and the reason I asked, is that's so important that it's 100% of the homes, because let's be candid, most new innovations, most new features that allow you to save money are only available to people that can afford the higher end, right? It's an upgraded version. It's like buying a hybrid vehicle, right? Mm-hmm. The gas-powered vehicle is still the lower cost one. If you want to go hybrid, it's an extra $5,000 to $10,000 out of pocket. Well, if you're looking to save money, if you have limited resources, you're not upgrading to hybrid, right? That's a luxury option for a lot of people. Not with these homes, everyone's benefiting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think a thing we were really proud to do, again, launched this about 2 years ago, is that we did not go through and increase the cost of every home in order to achieve this, right? Like, we viewed it as the right thing to do and the best thing to do, both for our industry, but also for consumers.
Yep. Love that. Love that. All right. Any other innovations that are happening that are really going to help out with affordability, with time to market, things like that? Because I know Clayton's up to a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the, I mean, there's a couple, but I don't want to be here on here for 2 hours. But I think one of the biggest is chassis removal, right? We have the opportunity to update the HUD code. It literally takes an act of Congress. But if we can remove that chassis, you know, consumers are going to be saving a lot of money. I think $8,000 to $12,000, rough back of napkin math. Don't ever hold me to that. But, you know, we're able to utilize that steel again to move and set another home, right? And that also could enable us to be able to go vertical in ways that are difficult now, because that HUD code requires that the steel frame, that chassis, stay attached to the home. But again, we know 95-98% are never moving. So it's just steel sitting for no purpose and value, right? And so creates a lot of opportunity for new approaches to that construction. But then also, we're not going to use as many resources to produce steel that is really kind of used just the once for transportation. So big opportunity there, because that's going to create totally new approaches to housing, but still leveraging, you know, the modern manufactured industry and our facilities.
So as it sits right now, every manufactured and modular home?
No,
or just the main manufactured HUD.
Yeah, just HUD code homes. So that's I've worked with a number of builders and developers out there that want to go to modular. And one of the things we try and help them understand is, like, you understand what you want to achieve there, right? But if we go and use a cross mod, right, it's going to have that same fit and finish. We're going to be able to move a little bit faster because of the National Building Code, and it's going to cost less over time. Like, it's probably going to cost less on the front end and probably cost less for the rest of the time. So, you know, it's really just the HUD code homes. And again, that's back to, you don't know what IRC has adopted and how to go through and build that and then get the certification from the DOE that this home was zero energy ready is its own major challenge. You can't do that for one-offs.
That makes total sense. And I don't know if a lot of people know that. I know, you know, working in this industry, I understand that there's a chassis for the transportation of these units, but I never thought, you know, the removal was even possible of the chassis, but that makes sense, right? If it's never going to move again, it doesn't need that, right? Once it's on site, it's no longer needing that. It's really wasted resources at this point.
Yeah.
That's kind of held up by the
absolutely. And you know, I think the best part about a change like that is it enables us to make the change when and if we want to, right? We don't have to do that with every single home, because there are instances in which the home will be, you know, moved or transported again, and we need to have the steel chassis attached then. So it gives us just another tool in our tool belt, as opposed to saying everything must always be done the one way, right? So
that's excellent. Well, hopefully there's some future HUD changes that allow for that, right? That allow for that flexibility down the road. Well, it sounds like Clayton is up to a lot. Like, again, this development group that you're out there working with, that horizontal view of helping get these communities built and set up. If people want to learn more about this industry, and again, we work with a lot of different types of operators and developers out there, if they want to learn more about what's really going on in the space, whether it's the traditional modern manufactured home or this cross mod and how to help out with zoning and regulations, what are some of the good resources out there that you're aware of that they should be looking at?
Yeah, I'd like to think of myself as a resource first and foremost. So yeah, please reach out to me, right? Our team is here ready to help and help answer those questions and clarify as people move through that development process, especially if you're coming from outside the industry, right? You're going to need a little bit of handholding and someone to help you come along. There's a number of great resources online, and you know, each state too has maybe a test for you to go through and get a certification to be able to be a dealer. So there's a lot of opportunity to learn out there, but there's also an opportunity to approach us and say, hey, I just want to get this built. Can you take care of that for me? And yes, we will be able to turnkey from site planning to literally handing you keys for a home to move and sell to a consumer, rent to a consumer, top to bottom. So there's a lot of opportunity to learn and do as much or as little of a project as you want to.
Now, that's exciting, because when I talk to people that are kind of in this world of property management, real estate, rental housing, many of them are obviously very smart, but very driven to provide solutions that just make sense. So when they look at all these different areas, they're not dedicated to multifamily, single family, manufactured housing. They're dedicated to the solution that makes the most sense for the consumer in their business, right? So I think there's a huge opportunity when we talk about build to rent, when we talk about cross mod, areas like that, for people to maybe shift what they've done historically into a whole new industry and really elevate their business and continue to provide that supply that we need so desperately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of demand, and there's a lot of different ways to meet that demand. And we know that, you know, parks, communities, modern manufactured home industry more broadly can be a big part of that solution. And so there's incredible opportunity to go help solve this problem. And I love the way you phrased it, of like doing what makes the most sense. A lot of times, it's just a matter of helping us understand the end consumer and what you need to achieve with them. We've probably got a housing solution for that consumer of whatever it is you're trying to solve for.
Yeah, that's great. Excellent. So if they have questions, they want to learn more, obviously state, national organizations are great, but yourself, Ramsey, you're a great resource. We'll drop some links into our show notes like we always do. So if they want to learn more, they can go check it out. So as we come to the end of the episode, any last words of wisdom, thought as it relates to what Clayton's up to?
No, I mean, we're excited about the future. You know, there's a lot, as I said, a lot of opportunity. We talked about some of the innovations that are coming. We have even more in the pipeline, you know, some that'll take years to come to fruition, but others that will happen sooner. And we're thrilled to be growing the industry, because I think the opportunity for the industry is not so much to continue to fight over about the same 10%, right? Up market, down market. We tend to be about 10% of single family housing starts. We have the opportunity to come in and be 15, 20%, right? And so we can grow that pie. We can grow it by bringing in new people to the market and building more and more parks and communities and neighborhoods, because we need a solution. And a lot of times we're the best and smartest solution for affordable and attainable housing.
Excellent. Well, Ramsey, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you.
It has been a lot of fun. So thanks again. And thank you to our audience for joining us for another episode. And until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going beyond rent.